preempted by the Astros tomorrow. That's okay. We're going to do a football Friday on a Thursday, which means what's the weather going to be? We'll find out everything you know, need to know about the Utah State Aggies with the Nickel Report. Jordy and the Judge, Doug Moorer, will join me. Fausti, talking about high school football. And we can't forget the Astros. My good buddy does the television play-by-play for the Astros. Todd Callis will join us. And the Schwab makes his picks for another week of NFL action. All coming your way. A Football Friday today, Thursday, October 3rd, 2019.
The 3-1 pitch on its way. Swing and a drive to right field and deep. Back at it is Laureano to the wall. And what a way to start a game! Yandy Diaz goes oppo and he gives the Rays a 1-0 lead right out of the gate. Now the pitch to him. Swinging another one deep in the air towards right field. Heading back, Laureano turns and looks. How about another homer? Yandy Diaz makes it 4-0 Rays.
We've had to kind of create some momentum here the last 15 games of the regular season because of the pressure that the A's and the Indians put on us. So we've been on a nice roll here lately.
And a roll they were on and a roll they will continue as Tampa Bay beats Oakland 5-1. The Rays survive and advance. Up next, it's the Astros in the best of five series. It starts tomorrow at Minute Maid Park. It's a skip work kind of a day. 105 first pitch. We'll have it for you here on 103.7 The Game. So we'll do our Football Friday edition today on a Thursday. And that means we start things off, of course, with our weather report. Chris Cozart, meteorologist of the Stars, kind enough to join us from KLFY. Chris, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Doing all right. How about yourself on this Thursday?
I'm good. Everybody says fall's coming, but when's it coming, Chris? When are we going to get some cool temps?
Not until next week. We got the week until Monday. That's when we'll start to see some scattered showers and storms. And then after that, I think 50s possible Tuesday morning, as early as Tuesday morning. And then not this weekend, but next weekend, it actually looks even colder than that. So we got some cool weather. It will finally get here. It's just better late than never, you know?
All right, let's work our way from the furthest back to the nearest. Next Wednesday, we're trying to get them to pack Cajun Field, as the Raging Cajuns will take on App State in a huge game on national television. It's a Wednesday night. Looking far into the future, what do you anticipate the weather to be in Lafayette?
It's probably the best football weather that you can get right now, at least by what we're seeing at the moment when it comes to your forecast. It will be nice and cool that night and probably no threat for rainfall. Could that change? It's still, you know, a little less than a week away, but right now, it looks like perfect football weather to go out there and enjoy it.
When you say nice and cool, are we talking maybe 60s? What are we looking at?
Yeah, I would say probably more in the 70s, you know, when that kickoff happens. But then you'll see the 60s as well, maybe at the very end of the game.
All right, Chris Cozart, KLFY. All right, football in Acadiana. We've got high school football games. So hot, humid, typical at this time of the year?
Yeah, I mean, a little atypical, right? I mean, we're looking at, you know, some hot weather. We're probably in the 90s during the day and then into the low to mid-80s when those kickoffs happen. If there's games tonight, some isolated showers and storms north of I-10, not too many. And then tomorrow, we're going to have to watch out for some scattered storms right around that kickoff time as well.
All right, let's go to Saturday. This team from Utah State coming from Logan, Utah, where it's about 67 degrees as we speak right here, right now. I know it's going to be an 11 o'clock kickoff. I know it's going to be hot. Let's add the humidity factor into it. What's it going to feel like on the floor of Tiger Stadium?
Oh, you'll be pushing probably upper 90s, low 100s at that point. You know, it's going to be that. I think it's an 11 o'clock kickoff, right? So we're midday on that.
Yes.
So it's going to be on the toasty side there for Saturday, but it looks like minimal rain chances for Saturday at least, so we won't have to worry about that. But it will be hot for Utah. They're going to have to be really conditioned for that game.
We don't like Chris Cozart right now because it's too darn hot, but we're going to love you next week, Chris. So the cooler temps are well welcomed. We can't wait for it to happen. Thank you for your time, as always. I greatly appreciate it.
You're very welcome, man.
All right, Chris Cozart of KLFY with our up-to-the-minute weather forecast. Going to be hot until next week. And by next Wednesday, ideal football weather. Raging Cajun fans, another reason of no excuses. You got a team that's won four in a row. Conference game, national television, great weather. Pack the house. Coach O's looking for a packed house, even though he says as of right here, right now, we haven't really been challenged yet.
We have not been challenged up front yet as far as protection. We may get challenged this week, but I know down the road we're going to get challenged. We're prepared for that. But I do believe that we have answers. I do believe that Joe is a winner. The bigger the competition, the bigger the game, the better he's going to play. That's just the way type of player he is.
Bigger the game, the better he plays. I kind of love that. He says they're as healthy as they've been. And on his radio show last night, which you heard here on 103.7 The Game, he updated all those injuries on particularly the defensive side of the ball.
You know, Rashard Lawrence practiced full tilt yesterday, and he had a minor setback. I do believe that he's going to be probable for the game. We'll see if we play him or not. Kelvon Chastain looks like he's going to play. I'm going to start him. It looks like he's ready to go. He went through all the drills this week, so that's very good news for us. Glenn Logan is out of the boot. He's walking. Hopefully we get him back next week. I don't know if we will or not. And the same thing with Michael Divinity. Terrence Marshall is way ahead of schedule. He's out of a boot. He's walking. Jack has done a miraculous job with those guys. So we're right around the corner.
And no time too soon because the gauntlet is coming. You get past this one. And again, I believe LSU handles this one and handles this one quite well. It may not start off great, but they had their wake-up call at Vandy. Remember Vandy took that opening drive and ran it right down LSU's throat. They were still sound asleep, and they took Vandy lightly. So I don't think they'll do that this time. I think they'll be better prepared for it. They'll be at home, whole different scenario. I don't know what Tiger Stadium's going to be like. If they can get 70,000 people in the stands for this one, that would be pretty darn good. They ain't going to get close to 100. I can promise you that. That's not going to happen. But just got to get through this one because next Saturday, 7 o'clock, they'll have 102,000 in the building for that one. You can book that one. So we'll see how LSU handles this one. Of course, everybody talks about this offense from Utah State. I've never heard warp speed in a football game used before, but Coach O, one more time, talked about the strength of that offense and what he has to do to combat it defensively.
First of all, the ball gets out really quick, so we have to play some tight coverage. Our defensive line will go get their hands up. We've got to bat some balls down. When he does have time, he likes to go deep. We're going to have to put pressure on him. And obviously, Coach Aranda has a tremendous game plan on keeping those guys in front of him. That we can't get beat deep. I mean, that's got to be the key to the whole game plan, not let anybody run behind us and don't give them a big ball.
Here's what they're hoping for. The offense continues on their rapid pace. They build a lead, and they shut it down and rest people, and they start running the football after Joe Burrow gets his four or five touchdown passes. In a perfect world, that's what they're hoping for. So we shall see. All right, let's give the lineup again for what's going to happen today. Our football Friday on a Thursday with a couple of changes here and there. Jim Nickel coming up next, the Nickel Report, everything to know about the school from Logan, Utah. Jordy and the Judge after that. Doug Morrow, the color analyst on the LSU Sports Radio Network that you hear. LSU games right here on 103.7 The Game. We'll break down this ball game, talk about the tackling techniques. And I want to get his thoughts on the continued experiment of Christian Fulton. I don't think that experiment is for this game. I think that's for a game down the road in Tuscaloosa. So we'll talk about that. George Fowles, sports director of KLFY. We'll talk about football in Acadiana, big high school games this week, plus the Raging Cajuns. And then we'll go by to Minute Maid Park. Todd Callis, the voice of the Astros on television, good friend of mine, will join us. We'll talk about the Astros and the Rays. And then Frank Schwab, editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports, will pick all the NFL games. Is that enough? Keeping us busy? You bet. Nickel Report next.
This is everything you need to know about the Tigers' opponent on Saturday. Time for the Nickel Report.
Yes, indeed. And as we have said numerous times, we are doing our Football Friday on a Thursday. We've got the Astros and the Tampa Bay Rays airing during our showtime tomorrow. So we will oblige and be a team player on this one. But we're always thrilled to get Jim Nickel, the Crowley kid, and his research staff. We have never, ever before that I can recall had Utah State as one of our reports, but we're looking forward to it. Jim, good afternoon, my friend.
Good afternoon, Jordy, and to your listeners. I hope everybody's doing well. Try to get this heat out of the way. I heard fall coming next week. I'll believe it when I feel it.
No. I'll be sweating at Halloween, I guarantee you. There's no question. Are the Nickels big Halloween decorators? Are you big candy distributors?
A, yes, and B, no. My wife loves Halloween. It's her favorite holiday. A lot of decorations. But we tend to turn the lights off and go somewhere else and have a few libations. So, yes on the decorations, no on the candy. So.
Which means Jim is going to be a busy, busy man. He probably was in the bye week getting all those decorations out of the attic and getting them out. So, from the Mountain West, let's hear what you got to say about those that other school that's called the Aggies.
Utah State University Nickel Report. Utah State founded in 1888. Of course, all Jordy Holtberg show listeners know LSU was founded in 1860. Their endowment, $375 million. Not a lot of money. LSU beats them this time. We haven't beat many people in endowment. We win this one.
Wow.
They got about 30,000 students combined in their grad and undergrad, so a decent-sized school. It's located in Logan, Utah, which, by the way, CNN Money Magazine says Logan is the third best place in America to retire. Quaint town, very nice. If you can stand the snow, the rest of the year is really pretty in Logan, Utah. Good school. They've got seven Rhodes Scholars. They've had a Nobel Prize winner, so a very good education. 25% of the student body is from out of state, mostly of Church of Latter-day Saint members. A lot of Mormons tend to go to Utah for their education. Utah State gets their fair share. They are the Aggies. Their mascot is Big Blue. So I don't think Big Blue's making the trip, but if you were to go to Maverick Stadium where they play, capacity, 25,000. So it'll be a little bit different, both temperature-wise and crowd-wise, for the Utah State Aggies and Tiger Stadium. Some famous graduates, Harry Reid, who was the majority leader of the United States for a long time, graduated there. Here's one for you, Nolan Bushnell, who founded the Atari games. Remember Pong, when you would play Pong on the TV? Some of your old. Okay, Nolan Bushnell invented that. So what did he do after he invented all these cool games? He invented Chuck E. Cheese so he could put the games in there. So if you've ever been to Chuck E. Cheese in your
life,
Nolan Bushnell, Utah State, brought you Chuck E. Cheese. I was never a fan, but you had to do it. John Lindsay, who founded the company.
I've been to too many birthday parties at Chuck E. Cheese, and I don't want to go ever again. I'm sorry, Chuck E. Cheese. I'm done.
Brutal. Dick Motta, former coach of the Bulls, the Bullets, and the Mavericks in the NBA, a friend of yours. I know you encountered him back in your NBA TV time. Ezra Benson, who is the president of the Church of Latter-day Saints. Here's a good one for you. Nathan Baldwin. Nathan Baldwin graduated from Utah State, went to work for NASA back in the late 50s, early 60s. He invented the headphones. So a lot of things we get in our technological society – start at NASA. Anybody that wears a set of headphones nowadays, Utah State brought you the headphones courtesy of Nathan Baldwin. Lavelle Edwards, wow, the coach of BYU, they claim they won an 84 national championship. Very good football coach. And here's my favorite, a graduate of Utah State, Merlin Olsen. Merlin, yes, Olsen, remember him? Defensive Ooh. Guy for the Rams.
Yes.
Listen to this.
Yes, fearsome, foresome.
15 years in the NFL, 15 times he was an All-Pro. Only two other people have done that, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Pretty good record.
Wow.
Now, by the way, when
wow.
he left football, he went on to do some broadcasting with Dick Enberg on NBC Sports.
Yep.
But he also was a star in Little House on the Prairie.
Little House
and when
on
he
the
got
Prairie.
Big yeah. on Little House on the Prairie, Merlin got his own show. What was the name of Merlin's show? Father Murphy, an NBC
wow.
classic for a long time.
Wow.
And by the way, the field at Maverick Stadium is named for Merlin Olsen, and there is a statue of the great Merlin Olsen at Utah State if you ever get up to Logan. Their head coach is Gary Anderson. He was the coach at Utah State for 3 years. Then he went to Wisconsin for a year. Then he went to Oregon State for 2 years. Now he's back at Utah State. He was the offensive coordinator over in Hammond at Southeastern back in 1988. He had to pay $3 million to leave Wisconsin, and when he left Oregon State abruptly, he left $12 million on the table. They play in the Mountain State Conference. So some schools they play on a regular basis we know of, Air Force, Boise State, Colorado State, San Diego State, University of Wyoming. Those are some of the people that Utah State plays on a regular basis, and that is the Utah State Aggie Nickel Report.
A very comprehensive Nickel Report with video games and headphones. That is awesome, and the fact that it's a great place to retire.
There you go.
God, I kind of wish this was a road game. I wouldn't mind playing in about a 50 degree climate temperature, but it's gonna be a culture shock to these guys coming down to Baton Rouge with not only the heat but that dadgum humidity. I mean, they like to go so fast. I gotta believe that's gonna be a huge factor in the game.
Well, you know, the coaches always have a teleconference with the reporters, and Gary Anderson talked about that this week with the Louisiana Press. He is concerned that his players are not accustomed to this kind of heat, and he mentioned the humidity like you just did. And you'll notice it in the warm-ups. If you're at the game and you're there early, I bet you they don't warm up for a real long time. They're going to have to try to conserve their energy, and the way to do that is to probably not spend too much time in that early morning sun on Saturday in Tiger Stadium. But they got a real good quarterback. I'm sure you've talked about it on the show, and you will with Doug Morrow and others. But he's an NFL quarterback. He'll sling it around good. LSU's defense needs to come ready to play. They won't be like an Auburn or Florida. They're not tough like them. But I will tell you that they are going to be very, very prolific in their movement and in their passing game. And so I think Tiger fans need to be ready for a pretty fast-moving, hopefully, first half, and then the defense settles in, and maybe we take care of business. I think the Tigers score in the mid-50s again. Their defense isn't very good. Whether we can knock them down to a 20 or a 17-point game remains to be seen. But this is the last non-conference game. After this, it's conference till the end, and we got to get some people healthy and ready, and hopefully they'll be ready for Florida. 7 o'clock kickoff
7 o'clock.
On ESPN. Yep.
Two things come to mind. One, I can imagine that Paul Boudreaux, the wheels are turning. These guys are coming from 50 degrees. I can get those fans and put some ice, and I can charge him double, and he's going to make a fortune this weekend with his fans. And number two, we talked about Love, the quarterback. It kind of reminds me, let's go back a little ways. Miami of Ohio came to town, and they had another pretty good quarterback who was a pro prospect. His name was Ben Roethlisberger. Really good player. He just didn't have the support cast around to hang with a Power 5 school like LSU. And this is what that kind of reminds me of. I'm sure Love will have his plays, but when it's all said and done, I think LSU favored by 28. I think they cover. I think they blow this team out the stadium.
I agree with you. I think we need to be looking for some things. You know, if Rashard dresses out, how does he look? Yeah. Is he still a little gimpy, or can he fire off the line? Kalavon, I think, plans to play a little bit. How does he look? How do we, transition in the back with Fulton now playing some nickel back? So I think a lot of eyes will be on the defense, and then we'll see Ed Ingram for the first time. I think a welcome addition to our offensive line. He has, quote, stayed in shape, but there's one thing of being in shape and of being in football shape. When's the last time he hit anybody? When's the last time he blocked someone? I mean, look, by the end of the year, he's going to be a starter on our offensive line. He'll be a starter in a couple of games. But for this game, he just needs to kind of get his football feet under him. He needs to hit some people. He needs to be hit by some people. So this is a good game to kind of get ready for that conference gauntlet. And let me tell you, I am impressed by the way Florida's played with this new quarterback. I'm very impressed with how physical Auburn is. We are about to hit the gauntlet, and thankfully some of those are at home because we're going to need every advantage we can get.
After this one, we're Florida at home. I think CBS did us a huge favor by not picking us for the afternoon game. It's a 7 o'clock game. That's wonderful. We owe the Gators. It's been, I don't know, the last time Florida's been in Tiger Stadium. It seems so long ago. And then you got to go to Starkville. That's always kind of iffy, but we're better.
Yep.
And then here we go, Auburn, and then the bye week, and then Alabama. And, boy, we'll get challenged, as Coach O said. We'll get challenged now.
Yep. Real quick reminder for your listeners. I know you early voted this week. I early voted this week.
I did.
You know, if you're going to go to the game on the 12th, you need to get your – and you're not going to vote on the 12th. You need to early vote, and early voting ends Saturday. So let's make sure everybody – if you're going to be in Tiger Stadium, you're going to go wherever you're going to go, make sure you get in there and do your Democratic duty and vote. Get your little sticker, take a selfie, put it on Facebook, whatever you got to do. But let's make sure everybody gets out there and votes. A lot of people, you know, did a lot for this country for us to have that freedom, and we need to make sure that we honor that.
Well said. Jim Nickel covering it all on this week's edition of the Nickel Report with Utah State. Jim, thank you. Have a great spot well for Chris Blair. It'll be quick because these plays are coming left and right, so you better have that Marucci spotter thing working quickly for you. And there you have it. We'll take a timeout here. More of the Jordy Hultberg Show to come when we return. Doug Morrow joins us, Jordy and the Judge, here on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Time to talk Tigers with former All-American Doug Morrow. All rise! It's another edition of Jordy and the Judge.
One of my favorite segments of the week when I get to talk to my good friend Doug Morrow. The Tigers had the weekend off. Now they're getting ready for Utah State, the Aggies from the Mountain West. Doug, they're leaving Logan, Utah at about 50 degrees. They're coming down to Baton Rouge. It's going to be about 95 degrees or whatever it may be. That's got to be a factor. And good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm good. I mean, that's got to be a factor, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a factor. And it's one of those factors that you can never prepare for. Even the home team in this game can't prepare for it, but they've been through it a bunch of times, so they know how to deal with it best. It's going to be a real shock to Utah State to come into this environment from the environment they're coming from. Yeah. I mean, you can't prepare for it. So, you know, you think you can, you're in good condition. You show up, and all of a sudden, about three plays into the game, you realize you can't catch your breath, and you got 58 minutes left, and there's nothing you can do about it except try to hang on.
I mean, that's you.
It's a big advantage to the home team. It is.
We have talked, and look, Coach O talked about warp speed, and Utah State's offense, one of the fastest playing rates in college football. They snap the ball about every 15 seconds. Their touchdown drives have averaged about a minute 51. I want to see them with that humidity and that heat on their back if they're still snapping the ball that quickly.
You know, I don't know how either team is able to sustain it in conditions like this. Because if and they certainly, because their record indicates that, they want to run plays faster than LSU even runs it. And let me tell you, LSU runs plays so fast that it is a logistical difficulty for Chris Blair and Gordy and I to figure out who gets to talk when, because they don't get in a huddle. LSU doesn't, and I'm sure Utah State doesn't either. So you have, they run a play, they get up off the ground, they line up, they run a play, they get up off the ground, they line up. And so there's no time to discuss what happened. You just have to kind of wait until there's a timeout somewhere before you do something. So, but at least LSU is kind of used to it.
Thank goodness you don't get paid by the word. I mean, that's good in these kind of games. You may not get to say too much. We're talking with Doug Morrow, the former All-American. Ed Orgeron on his radio show last night said that Kalyvon Chaisson will return from his injury. He will start on Saturday. He said Rashard Lawrence is probable. And we got to get these guys ready, particularly for Florida. That seems to be the litmus test coming up. LSU hadn't been challenged yet by anybody defensively. I don't know if they're going to be challenged by Utah State. I know they will be against Florida. But when you think of Utah State, what do you think of?
Well, what I'm thinking of is a team that, first, they have a good quarterback. They have a good quarterback. They have a receiver who is a great kickoff return, leading the country, 42 yards average. His problem, of course, is that LSU kicks the ball over the end zone, and so there'll be no kickoff returns. And his other problem is that you don't want to be on the receiving end of a lot of kickoffs. You would rather be on the kicking end of kickoffs. So that's not a big advantage to Utah State unless it's a short kick. But, good quarterback, good receiver, good running back, but not a whole lot of other things. They lost 11 starters out of the starting 22. Trying to fill those gaps, and they hadn't filled them yet. So they're well coached. Gary Anderson's a good coach, been coaching for a long time, very sound, very solid. LSU's got people on their staff who have passed through Utah State as assistant coaches, and it's a good league. There are a lot of good teams in the league, and they run and know how to run the spread offense. So it'll be interesting to watch two teams that really do enjoy watching how to run the spread offense. But the fans will enjoy the game, I think, an awful lot. The players are going to get tired.
Yeah. With the fact that they run that spread and that up-tempo offense, one of the major points of emphasis during the bye week, LSU kind of studied and looked into how they're missing so many tackles. Missed 18 against Vanderbilt, which resulted in 148 extra yards. So apparently they're trying to adjust the players' angles and approaches against Utah State. I'm sure they have a lot of yards after the catch, so tackling will be a priority. So I'm interested to see how what normally has been a really, really good defensive team up until this point in time has not lived up to that yet.
Well, I tell you, one of the things that you'll notice, and I think if you look across the country, you'll notice this, as teams go to these spread offenses, I mean, because, LSU is not the only team going through this transition. Almost every good team is running some sort of spread, running a lot of RPOs. They're running multiple receivers. They're trying to emphasize speed offensively. And spread the opponents out, spread the defense out from sideline to sideline, and you have gaps and creases that you have created just by formation. If you have fast guys who can catch the ball and you have a guy who can throw it, what you end up doing is getting a lot of open field looks, and it's hard to tackle people in the open field when they're running fast.
Yeah.
It really is. So you find a lot more missed tackles, both for LSU playing defense and for the opposition playing defense. So you'll see LSU receivers who catch a slant 10 yards deep, 8 yards deep in the secondary, but because the field has been spread by the formation, there's a gap there which a guy that has a lot of speed is going to be able to utilize, and he's going to get to the goal line. That's why LSU is scoring so fast, because they have the ability to do it. Because of personnel and because they're getting accurate throws from the quarterback. And as long as the offensive line blocks well enough to let them execute that offense, then it's going to work. But other teams do that to you, too. Alabama's doing that like crazy. I mean, Alabama's going to be a real difficult challenge for LSU because they have kind of the same match of good passer, a bunch of good receivers, and enough good linemen to hold them out.
Doug Moore, kind enough to join us. He'll be on the call of the game with Chris Blair, 11 a.m. kickoff Saturday morning in Tiger Stadium. You talk about LSU and their prolific passing game. Terrence Marshall is out. LSU relies upon three receivers. I know Justin Jefferson. We all know about Ja'Marr Chase and the job they've done. Marshall's been terrific. He's got six touchdown receptions out of his 20 catches for 304 yards. He suffered that fracture in his right foot against Vanderbilt. He's been walking without a medical boot. But who do you think who's going to be that reliable third wide receiver until he gets back?
I think you could take any one of the number of maybe eight or nine of LSU's receivers and stick them in there, and you're going to find someone who is very productive. They are that good offensively. They have that many. John Troy Kirkland, you know, he plays quarterback on the scout squad when the other team runs an option offense. He's played cornerback. They stick him in at receiver, and he makes great catches and picks up a lot of yards. And he's a guy that is way down the list. Every one of their players is like that. Plus, they have two or three freshmen who have shown flashes of brilliance when they've gotten a chance to play so far this year. But they may have a chance to play in this game. So I think what LSU's coaches would like to do is to have so many receivers that it doesn't make any difference who's in there. They're all capable of doing what's necessary to make this offense run. And I think that's a big benefit because Terrace Marshall is going to be out for a little while. I think whether it's going to be three more weeks, four more weeks, more or less, who knows at this stage. But it's not necessary that they have him. They don't have to force him into playing. Now, defensively, what they need to do is to have some of those injured players get back on the field and kind of get back in game condition.
Right.
You don't want them to play the entire game, their first game back, particularly as hot as it's going to be. But you'd like to have your best pass rushers to have a chance to play because LSU really does suffer a lot from having injured linebackers and defensive ends, but you don't get a real pass rush in the middle of the defensive line. Starting to come around now, but is not quite there yet. So this game will be a test of sorts, but next week it's going to be a real test.
Yeah.
And you don't want to injure somebody this Saturday so that you eliminate them from the Florida game.
Yeah. Doug Morrow, kind enough to join us. I'm curious your thoughts on why LSU has continued to experiment with Christian Fulton and taking him from a cornerback position out on an island, moving him inside in a nickel formation. Are there multiple reasons behind this? And is the play of Grant Delpit involved in this in any way, shape, or form?
Well, you know, Grant Delpit is a great player. And last year they were able to use him in a lot of situations, as much as they used Tyrann Mathieu when he was here. You remember, though, when Tyrann Mathieu participated in the second Alabama game of the year when Alabama won the national championship against the Tigers because they put him in a position that was not his strength. And that's what's happening to what people are doing to Grant Delpit. He's a really good player, and they can use him on blitzes. They can use him much like Tyrann Mathieu did. What they're trying to do, what the opposition is trying to do, is make him stay back in the secondary and tackle people in the open field, and it's hard to do back there. He can have a really good game, but he's going to miss two or three tackles because that's going to happen. So you have a player that is going to suffer through that, and he starts getting embarrassed, and people are talking about, well, he's missing too many tackles. You know, he's just really not playing hard. Well, he is playing hard. He's a really good player. but he's playing in a different situation in a different places. Christian Fulton was playing at cornerback, and the Cardale Flott, a freshman, has played well enough where they can start him there, put Fulton back at the nickel where he has more of the middle of the field to cover, and he's now in a position where he can help take away those slants, the things that Texas did effectively against LSU, and make tackles in the middle of the field, because he's a good tackler and he's a guy that has some experience. So I think that's what LSU's coaches are trying to do, but as they say, we're experimenting, and that means they don't know the answer to it yet, but they know that this may be a possible answer, and they have enough people in the secondary where they can experiment the way that they want to before they get to the conference schedule, because you're not going to be able to experiment too much once you start playing those kind of teams.
And that was that. I think that's why they're doing. I think they have Alabama, and I know you've got to get through Florida and you got to get to Mississippi State and Auburn, but with the prolific trio of wide receivers that Alabama has, I think they're thinking ahead of time and let's get them some playing time in this position now. Where if we make a mistake, okay, we can rectify it. You make a mistake against Alabama with those receivers, that's a touchdown. So I kind of understand their logic and their thought process behind this.
I agree with you, Jordy. I think that that's what they're trying to accomplish, is to prepare people in the secondary to be able to play multiple positions for one thing, but to also get them some experience back there with what is coming down the road. Because Alabama's not the only team that's going to have talented receivers, but they have more of them than most other teams. LSU's got more of them than Alabama has even. I think we've got more talented receivers. We may not have anyone who is as good as Jerry Jeudy, but we got a bunch of them that are pretty close.
Doug Morrow, kind enough to join us here on this Jordy and the Judge edition on a Thursday. All right, so what should we expect? What are you looking forward to from this game?
I'm looking forward to first LSU defensively has to see if the tackle drills work. If all that work that they put in the off week, if it worked, because that's going to be pretty noticeable pretty quickly. And what happens is you end up, when you have a team that tackles well, all of a sudden you notice that they're gang tackle, that they're more than one people. And when you have somebody to help you, you don't feel all alone in the open field. So that's one of the things I think that you look for, is to see if they're gang tackling. And to do that in the heat that is going to exist out there Saturday, they're going to have to play a lot of players. That means they're going to have to get some of those defensive linemen, get them back from their injuries, and get them some reps out on the field. And they have to have enough people where you can bring people in to spell them as they get tired. So I think the most important thing is defensively, you've got to be very sound and make the opposition work for whatever points they're going to get. I think LSU offensively is going to be sound. And Ed Ingram, I think, is going to be a big factor. He's the best offensive lineman we have, and he's going to be coming back. Now, he hasn't played in the game in quite some time, but he's seemingly in very good condition. He's going to be a real force wherever they play him in the offensive line, and that gives you an extra substitute on the offensive line. So all of a sudden, LSU goes from having a little above-average offensive line to a really good one. And so those two things, I think, are things you watch for.
About 40 years ago, there was a heck of a football game this week, 40 years ago in Tiger Stadium. So only time I ever saw LSU lose a game and get a standing ovation from their fans as Johnny Robinson's USC Trojans came to town. Charles White and McDonald was the quarterback in a late drive, questionable face mask call, and the Trojans got the win. But it was still to this day one of the greatest games I've ever seen.
It is one of the great games of all time. You couldn't have a better game filled with stars who played like stars.
Yep, it was fun. They had a couple of Heisman Trophy winners, Charles White and His backup was pretty good, too. Yeah, that was a heck of a game. Well, Doug, I hope you thank goodness you're in an air-conditioned booth. Early kickoff, and you'll be home watching more football games. And we always appreciate your time, my friend. Have a great call of the game.
Thank you, Jordy. Great talking to you. And sorry you got bumped in favor of the baseball games, but baseball
That's
won't
okay.
be here very long.
That's right. That's okay. We're glad to. We are glad and willing to, you know, be a team player in this thing. Thank you, Doug. That's Doug Morrow. Jordy and the Judge, and that's brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets with over 60 in southern and central Louisiana. Oh, you got to become a Buku Rewards member. It's simple to sign up. You get discounts all the time off of food and beverages and spirits. Just go take a look. ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. Nothing better in the world. We'll be back to wrap up hour number one. This is the Jordy Helfert Show, 103.7 The Game.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Just to reiterate the point, as we speak right here, right now, temperature in Baton Rouge, 94 degrees with a 51% humidity factor. All right, let's go to Logan, Utah. Currently 67 degrees, only 34% humidity. Huge, huge difference. They're going to dip down into the 30s by Friday morning, into the 30s. So huge, huge difference. It's that time of the year. And we've got the 13th Gate tickets giveaway for you and yours. You can win VIP tickets to the 13th Gate, the ultimate haunted attraction in Baton Rouge. VIP means no waiting in line. You walk right into the place where your worst nightmare comes to life. Enter to win in the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com for your chance for VIP tickets to the 13th Gate, the ultimate haunted attraction in Baton Rouge. And if you want to test your football knowledge with Acadiana Sports Station, make sure to get your picks in for week 5. 1037thegame.com. Try to beat the best with the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. I have no idea how I'm doing, we'll leave that to my main man, my producer extraordinaire, to figure all that out. I made the picks one time. Now it's up to him as my general manager to find the right players. If not, he's fired. He's done, and I'll find somebody else. All right. So we've had the weather report from Chris Cozart. We've had the nickel report from Jim Nickel. We've had Doug Morrow breaking down the ball game. Coming up in hour number two, George Faust of KLFY will tell us all about high school football in Acadiana, plus the Raging Cajuns. Fill the stadium, please. Todd Callis, TV voice of the Houston Astros, will join us, and the Schwab makes his NFL picks. Hour number two is going to be busy. It's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining. You make sure you stick around. The Jordy Helfert Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two on this Thursday, October 3rd, the year 2019, as we continue our Football Friday on a Thursday. We're proud to have the Astros on tomorrow, 1:05-ish. First pitch, it'll be Justin Verlander on the bump for the Astros. But it's another busy week of high school football in Acadiana. The Raging Cajuns trying to pack the house for next Wednesday. So we got our sports director for KLFY, our good friend George Faust, joining us today. George, thanks for the change up. I greatly appreciate it, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. It's been a fun week with the Saints taking care of business, the Cajuns on a hot streak, and things looking good.
High school football game. There's a big one at St. Thomas More. Two powerhouses are colliding. Catholic High from Baton Rouge coming up to Acadiana to take on St. Thomas More. That's the game of the week in the state of Louisiana.
Yeah, look, Catholic High obviously is become a power in Division One for sure, and STM is perhaps the best team when you look at Class 4A in, I guess, Division Two. So, this contest is one that, you know, as a fan, you should have circled. There's a few other ones around the area, too, that are probably pretty pretty interesting as well. But definitely throughout the state, that game has a lot of people, a lot of eyes on it, if you will.
No question. Let's talk about some of those other games in the area that you and your crew will be covering.
Yeah, absolutely. So they have Turlings and Bro Bridge. What an interesting matchup this is, because Bro Bridge is off to one of their better starts in recent years. They have a phenomenal wide receiver in Detravian Girard, and this young man is he's so fast and like people seem to underestimate him. And when he gets into gear, when he plays in the game, it's for some reason he's football fast, you know. Uh-huh. And he's not exactly the fastest guy on a track, maybe from, you know, starting to going. But I was talking to his coaches this week, and they were telling me, look, they don't know what it is. He just finds the spots. He's not slow by any stretch of the imagination, but he's not going to run past big time defenders, but he will find his way, catch the ball and make yards, get good yardage. And so it's been very a very good season thus far for them. Now, Turling's also off to an unbelievable start. They had that hiccup against Notre Dame a week ago, but that was a contest that was unbelievable, back and forth, a lot of fun to watch. I was at that game for a little bit. So, Turling's, as Coach Dane Schiaponce, he really has a team that he likes, and a team that he thinks he can kind of catapult into the next level, because Turling has been one of those teams kind of on the cusp waiting for that big season. And so you got two teams that are kind of at the top of their games, and that's always fun.
Yeah, that Bro Bridge team, that's that passing game that you mentioned with the wide receiver, but that's the big reason why they've blossomed along the way. What's another good one?
The other good one. Where am I going? I do the schedule Sunday night, so I'm sitting here in my brain. I'm trying to think of exactly where I have everybody else going. I'm going to head to Ascension. I'm going to be there. I can't remember exactly that team. That Ascension's an interesting team to me too, because you have Matt DeSormo. He's the head coach, and they have a quarterback in Cole Seymour, who's kind of been around a lot. You know, he's played a lot of snaps, even though he's entering his junior year. He started a lot of games as a freshman, so they have a very good offensive team, and they're in that class. I think they have Catholic High New Iberia, remembering correctly. And so Brent Endest and his crew will be, and that's a district game. Everybody seems to be starting up district now, so that's gonna be a fun game, because Brent Endest has a quarterback, an athlete, a stud, Trey Amos, that everybody needs to keep their eye on as the season wears on, because that young man really has some talent. and he'll be playing on Saturdays for sure in a year.
George Faust, kind enough to join us. I've got a stat for you. Now that SMU is back in the AP poll for the first time since 1986, I've got the longest Associated Press poll droughts for you. It's okay. Been since 1994 that Indiana was in the top 25. Rice, the last time they appeared was in 1961. New Mexico State, 1960. North Texas, 1959. And the team that has had the longest drought between appearances in the top 25, the UL Ragin' Cajuns. The last time they were in the top 25 was 1943.
Wow.
They're 4-1. They get this game Wednesday. That drought may come to an end.
That's a heck of a stat there, Jordy. That's quite impressive. You had the research team working overtime on that
All right, baby. I'm sending that one to you. You can use that on KLFY.
I'll do it.
No added to me. No, nothing necessary. But here again, are we going to pack Cajun Field? I mean, come on.
And they need to, right? I mean, so many times it's been the fans have had the excuse, well, they're not playing good enough, you know. They're not playing anybody. And I've always, look, I went to Ole Miss when they were put on probation and they were, you know, nobody was going to the games. And there was a big push from those guys back then in the mid-90s when I was there. It was, yeah. Look, you don't go to watch the other team. You're not going to see VMI take on Ole Miss. You're going to support your guys. And right. They were average. That Ole Miss teams that I watched until the late 90s, they were average. So this team that the Cajuns have, they're not average. This is a good team. This is a team that could win the Sun Belt, that could play in a very meaningful bowl. And so I think what fans need to realize is you reflect the program. And so it's their job as fans to get out to the game. You want to go to the game? You want to watch it on TV? Great. They had these beautiful things called DVRs. DVR it. You want to see yourself on TV? Go to the game. Get all dressed up. Put your sign out there. Get on TV. Go back home that night and watch it on DVR, and you'll be there forever, you know? So, it really annoys me a lot of times that fans kind of use that excuse. Hey, you know, they're not good enough. Or, hey, you know, I can watch it on TV. Well, yeah, you can watch it on TV. You can watch anything on TV. Everything's going to be on TV. But you can't make an argument about it costs too much money because they've done the university's done a phenomenal job of making this game affordable for families, for fans. And so that's there's no more excuse there. It really needs to happen. You go to watch your team. You don't go to watch the other team. You know, so
Were you surprised, George, at the rapidity in which the UL administration gave Napier a contract extension through 2023?
I think it was definitely a smart idea. I don't have a problem with it. I think you want to lock him up. I've heard this said numerous times, and I kind of agree with it. If Ole Miss or Mississippi State or some SEC school, South Carolina, they have an opening here in the next year or two, and he gets a call, I think he takes that call and he entertains that idea to be in the SEC.
Sure.
It's the SEC. But I think if Tulane comes calling or Louisiana Tech or Memphis or some team like that, if a mid-major that maybe bills themselves a little higher than the Sun Belt, I think that you don't have to worry about that. I think he's in a better situation than if he would go to a team like a North Texas who's in a conference that's different than the Sun Belt or a Western Kentucky or something like that. There's no reason that lateral move won't happen now, no matter the situation, because I think Coach Napier's in a better spot. But I have no problem with it.
Unless fans don't show up. I'm telling you.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I mean, at some point, that's gonna affect what happens with your you want a top notch program. Well, you have to be top notch fans as well,
yes.
because
yes.
That's part of the program is coming to the games and you know, supporting these guys. And look, I wrote it out there. I put it out there on Twitter the other day. You know, there's no reason why not to go to the game. I mean, look, get off of work at what, 5:36, go home, take a shower, get over there as soon as you can, get your ticket, load up the I was going to say the dome, but the load up Cajun Field. If it was basketball, that would have fit. But but load up Cajun Field it might be a little bit later night, but hey, we've all done that.
Yeah, sleep right. In the next life. George Faust, KLFY, busy high school football, and Tigers are at home, Saints are at home, and then it's the Raging Cajuns on Wednesday. Thanks for adapting and adjusting with us. We greatly appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Friday. Thank you, my friend.
Sounds good, Jordy.
All right, you take care. George Faust, KLFY Sports Director. That brought to you in part by Peterbilt of Louisiana, with offices in Lafayette, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and in Lake Charles. New sales, used sales, leasing ability, service, parts, we've got it all. It's the dream of every truck driver to own a Peterbilt, because Peterbilt is the best, the most reliable, most dependable, the most comfortable. When the Tigers travel from point A to point B and get their equipment to the next stadium, they travel via a Peterbilt. We've got the Cajuns covered. We got to cover the Houston Astros. My good friend and the television play-by-play voice of the Astros, Todd Callis, joins us next. It's the Stros and the Rays here on 103.7 The Game. We'll be right back.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Hi, welcome back. 19 minutes after the hour. We're efforting to get my buddy Todd Callis on, but getting some voicemail. I know it's busy. He's got a show to do. They've got practice going on. So we will continue. Meanwhile, Peterbilt of Louisiana has reigned as America's premium quality heavy-duty truck manufacturer since the company's founding in 1939. Peterbilt's maintained its enviable position as the class of the industry by concentrating on delivering high performance, low maintenance, and extremely durable vehicles that pay off in low operating costs, driver productivity, and high resale value. It's the dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. And you've got plenty of opportunities in Lafayette, Lake Charles, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. New truck sales, used truck sales, leasing of trucks. We've got a service department. We've got parts department. Look, it's the best because it's the most reliable, most dependable, most comfortable, best looking. And when LSU travels on the road, they get their equipment there because of Peterbilt Trucking. Peterbilt of Louisiana. Okay, we'll press on. Sometimes you get thrown a curveball, and it just happens. The Astros will take on the Tampa Bay Rays tomorrow, 105, Game 1. You know the pitching order. Justin Verlander will pitch Game 1. Garrett Cole will pitch Game 2 on Saturday. They're both coming off of one day extra out of their normal rotation. Zach Greinke will pitch Game 3. He's coming off 11 days rest between starts, so that's significant. All right, my buddy Todd Callis, the TV play-by-play voice of the Houston Astros, 3 years running now, joins us. Todd, I know you're busy, man. I greatly appreciate it, buddy. How have you been?
I'm good, Jordy. How you doing? We've had a lot of press conferences, and I just got out of the last one, but I'm good.
I can understand completely. What a series this is, because prior to coming and joining the Astros, you talk about great timing on your part. You spent about 19 seasons with doing television for the Tampa Bay Rays. So if anybody knows what's going on between these two teams, it's got to be you.
Yeah, this is a pretty cool matchup for me. I was really hoping last night that the Rays would beat Oakland, and I was pretty fired up when they did. But still have a lot of good friends over there on the Tampa Bay side, even though I've been here in Houston for three seasons. But, yeah, I was with Tampa Bay from the time they started all the way through the time I got this job with the Astros.
What's going on? The Astros, the best team in baseball record-wise, but, man, historically, they don't play the Rays very well. In fact, they've gone 3-4 in season series against the Rays for the past three seasons. They haven't won a series against them since 2008.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy to think about it. And the irony there is that was the year that the Tampa Bay Rays won the AL East and went all the way to the World Series was 08. So, since A.J. Hinch has been here as the manager of the Astros, Tampa Bay is the only team that he has not had a winning season series against in the American League. So, Tampa Bay pitches well. They match up because they can throw lefties, righties with a thick bullpen. Their offense has movable pieces, too. So they could be a tough out. And the best of five series, you never know, especially with Charlie Morton sitting back there for game three. If you're an Astros fan, you're probably hoping that they go 2-0 in these first two games because you don't want to be 1-1 with Morton going game three in a short series.
Blake Snell was their starter. He's been hurt. He's come out a little bit lately. Is he finished his rehab in time to make a start?
Well, it's kind of the same setup for both Tyler Glasnow tomorrow and Blake Snell on Saturday in that they have not been stretched out coming off the injured list. So you're looking at, 60, 70 pitches for each of them. And I would imagine Kevin Cash and the Rays have a bullpen plan going. So they're probably going to have to stack up their bullpen arms from the fourth or fifth inning on. I would be surprised if either one of those starters goes long enough to qualify for a win.
Todd Callis, son of the legendary Harry Callis, also an Astro announcer. You were born in Houston, so, this is where you belong.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how it's worked out. I was here from birth until age five, and then my dad moved to Philadelphia and stayed there the rest of his career, and that's pretty much where I grew up. But to circle back and join the Astros almost 50 years later is kind of crazy.
Timing is everything. You join them right when they're really, really good. Carlos Correa says he's going to play. A.J. Hinch says he's going to play. What does that mean for the Astros, and how effective do you think he can be?
I think he'll be fine. He came off the injured list in his second game back the last time around. He hit two home runs. So he's been working out. He's been tested. They've been kind of a little cautious with him. The Astros had the division at hand. They were going for the home field advantage, but they didn't want to really push Correa that last series in Anaheim. So they're probably a little extra cautious with him at that point. If it was a postseason at that stage in late September, he probably could have played. So I think it'll be fine. The fact that he's hitting seventh just lengthens out this lineup a little bit more. It's already a very good lineup without Correa, as we've seen the last few weeks. But with him in there, it's just that added weapon. So getting Carlos back not only helps you on the offensive end, but he's one of the best shortstops defensively, and he keeps getting better defensively every year.
Todd Callis, the television voice of the Houston Astros. This part of the world, we're big Alex Bregman fans. They call Reggie Jackson Mr. October. I hear the word now is circulating that it's called Bregtober.
Yeah, he doesn't mind probably wearing that label. I've heard that a little bit too. I know all those LSU fans are big Alex Bregman fans, and rightfully so.
Right.
What a career he had there in Baton Rouge. I think he's as talented and as confident of a combination that I've seen in a long time. He goes up there and he figures out a way to get it done and puts himself in the best position to succeed. He's the guy that, if you get him on the line, you probably don't want anybody else in that lineup up there other than Alex Bregman because he is that clutch.
How fun is it to cover this team? They seem so close. I know winning makes everybody happy and they've won more than anybody, but golly, they look like they all get along.
Yeah, Jordy, that's the thing that stuck out for me all those years when I was in Tampa Bay, coming here as a visitor, is watching how much Correa and Altuve and Springer just brought joy to the field every time they played. And it wasn't necessarily about being the most talented team at that point in 2013 and 14. It was about, and then 15 when Correa joined them. It was about just how much fun they had playing the game. Plus, those were the best players on the team at the time, having that much fun. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. These guys play like they're in Little League right now. They just bring that passion and joy. And it hasn't stopped. I mean, it's the most talented team I've ever been around. And they have a lot of fun on and off the field. They're a very close-knit group. It's a combination that you rarely see, and I'm savoring every moment of this season because it has been certainly very special.
Can you get me Mattress Mac? I mean, anybody that's going to bet $3.5 million on his team, I got to talk to him. That guy's something, huh?
He is. He's done promotions now the last 3 years, had to pay off a lot of free betting on in 2017, and this year he upped it so that it was the high-end mattresses that he sells, that he was willing to comp those if the Astros won the World Series. So it's quite an expenditure if the Astros do win it all. So I think he tried to hedge that promotion a little bit by getting some money back in the casino if he can. So, but he is a true Houstonian. He's done a lot for the city, and he is really behind the Astros every step of the way.
He may have a little Lloyd's of London insurance behind this. I can say I've done games, and I've worked with Todd Callis. You were a pro's pro. It was a lot of fun working with you. Continued success to you. And we're pulling for the Stros, man. That it should be a heck of a series. Not going to be an easy series by any stretch of the imagination, but should be a really good one. Best 3 out of 5. Anything can happen.
You're right about that, Jordy. Great talking to you, and I love the fact that Louisiana is cheering for the Astros.
There you go, brother. That's it. Todd Callis, thank you so much. We'll have game one right here and all the games here on 103.7 The Game. Astros and the Rays, best of 5 starting tomorrow, 105 first pitch. We'll shift back to football. The Schwab joins us, NFL picks week number 5. Coming up next after this timeout on the Jordy Helpert Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
All right, it's week 5 of the NFL. Can the Saints make it 3 in a row without Drew Brees? We got a good Thursday nighter, the Rams at the Seahawks. The Rams just haven't looked like the same on offense this season. But let's get it from the expert, as October football usually means separation time in the NFL. Frank Schwab, the editor for Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports, joins us each and every Thursday. We're so thankful for that. Good afternoon, Frank. How are you?
Doing well. Yeah, you get to the point where it seems like some of these teams are using September as the preseason. It's like September is a new August. So in October, we really start to figure out, you know, okay, this is for real. This team's slow start wasn't that big of a deal. You know, we start to separate things now.
Can we just get it out of the way real quick? I mean, the dirtiest player in football, did he get the right discipline, Vontaze Burfict?
Yeah, absolutely. I have no problem with this whatsoever. At some point, when you tell a guy over and over and over, hey, this is illegal, this is putting your fellow competitors at risk, and he can't follow the rules, well, what else are you going to do? You can't just say, well, we'll fine you again and put you out there. You're talking about a guy's safety, guy's lives, and I have absolutely positively no problem with year-long suspension. Again, I mean, if you have no respect at all for the game or your fellow opponents, I just don't feel sorry for you. It's not like this was a one-time thing. This is repeated, I think the NFL's better off without Vontaze Burfict.
I'm with you. You YouTube him, and they got about 4 or 5 minutes of just egregious acts. And the fact that he runs off the field clapping and waving to the fans, that summed it all up for me. But, all right, let's get rid of that. Let's get to the fun part. The Rams are at the Seahawks tonight. Man, the Rams defense was terrible last week against Tampa Bay. Do they bounce back in the Pacific Northwest against Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks?
Yeah, the Rams are a weird team where you look, they're 3-1. You think that's good, but if you've actually watched the Rams, you say something's not right here. Jared Goff doesn't look like the same guy. Todd Gurley obviously doesn't look like the same guy. Their defense is not great, and I think it was exposed a little bit last week. I guess, with all those things factored in, and then the fact that Seattle's a really, really tough place to play, it's as loud of a venue as I've ever been in. I got to go with the Seahawks here. I don't love the Seahawks. I don't think they're a great team either. I mean, you look at week one, they almost lost to the Bengals at home. How good are the Seahawks? But I just can't. I don't know. I just think it's a tough turnaround, a tough venue. And the Rams just aren't the same team right now. I don't know if it's a Super Bowl hangover. I don't know if people have caught up to their offensive scheme. I don't know if Jared Goff has been exposed a little bit. There are some of their personnel losses over the offseason. Maybe it's all of those things. But I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
Yeah,
and if the Rams win, I'll believe again. But I'm just not with them right now.
Tampa Bay had their best. It seems like they have one of these games all year, every year, and then they kind of fall back down into the abyss. But they're a hot team. They're in New Orleans to take on the Saints, a big division game for both teams. The Saints have won two straight. I mean, you know, at Seattle and against a Dallas team who we talked about. They hadn't played anybody yet, and the Saints kind of punched them in the nose on that one. Their defense was terrific. This might be a tight one. It's a division game, and they always seem to be close.
They do. I think they're going to be tight because the Saints just have kind of embraced this. If you would have told me 2 weeks ago, I'm allowed to watch the Buccaneers games but not see what the Saints do, I'd say, wow, the Buccaneers play pretty well. The Saints might be in a little bit of trouble. But you watch the Saints, and it's like, I know Teddy's not playing great, but they've really – just decided we're going to play this style and we're going to do it well. And it's not going to be pretty, but we're going to survive till Drew gets back and he's going to save the day. I really think that I was against them last week. We talked about it. I thought the Cowboys were going to come in and win. I mean, if you would have told me, hey, the Saints aren't going to score a touchdown, I felt really good about it. But this is just a grinded out, tough. I think Sean Payton's done a great job. I think that team has done a great job showing its toughness. I'm with the Saints here. I think it's going to be close just because, like I said, I think all their games are going to be 17-14 or whatever. But I really believe in the Saints team and the way they're playing. I think we're going to look up whenever Drew is ready to come back and say, wow, they really weathered that storm a lot better than anybody thought. Now they can go on. And I do power rankings every Tuesday morning. And, you get the top two. Top two is the easy, Chiefs, Patriots. You get the number three, I didn't know who to put in, and I kept looking at teams. I just decided, the Saints are number three for me right now. Because, they've embraced the style of play, and I think they're actually going to be better off for it when Drew comes back. They're a much more well-rounded team. They've had guys step up. They've found different ways to win. And then if Drew is healthy, there's some question about that at age 40 coming off of surgery. But I think if Drew looks like Drew, I think the Saints are the best team in the NFC. I've really, really been impressed with them the last two games.
I think the defense said, you know what, we're not going to be able to score a lot of points. We got to buckle down here, and they've been terrific. Thomas Morstead, special teams, NFC special teams player of the month. His punts are great. The kicking game is great. Return game is much better. I'm with you. I like the Saints in this one, but a close one. It's going to keep us on the edge of our seats again and again and again. All right, Jacksonville at Carolina. If you told me before the season started that it'd be Gardner Minshew versus Kyle Allen, I'd say, what college game are you talking about? But those are the quarterbacks for the Jags and the Panthers. Both are playing really good football, but both are going to be playing against some really good defenses. Jags coming now on back-to-back road games. But something about this Minshew guy. He's pretty good.
He is. It's kind of crazy. You just expect him to come back to earth a little bit, and he makes plays, and they're making plays around him. It's similar to the Saints, where the Jaguars, I think, have just accepted this. Hey, we all got to play better. This guy's good enough. He'll make some plays. He's not going to carry us. It's going to be a team effort. I really think they bought into that. And the funny thing is, when you were saying, Gardner Minshew against Kyle Allen, you would have said, I'm not watching this game. I wouldn't come near this game. But it's actually a pretty good game. This is a fun one.
Yeah.
This is two teams that have, I respect the heck out of the Panthers. kind of getting through. You know, I mean, they were 0-2. Cam's done. You're like, wow, this season could really get out of hand for them. And they've won two in a row on the road. Very impressive. I do kind of like the Jaguars here. I think it does depend on Jalen Ramsey. Does he play? What's going on with him? Is this a blue flu type of deal? Is he really banged up? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. If he plays, he makes such a difference. You could see it last week. I mean, Joe Flacco really liked the game with Jalen Ramsey out of the lineup. So I think if Jalen Ramsey plays, I really like the Jaguars. I think they're playing really tough football. Leonard Fournette, something's clicked with him. He's playing better.
Right.
And I think the Panthers are playing good ball too, but I think just the Jaguars defense, I think, carries the day here, and they give a little bit of an upset. I think that the Jaguars, I don't know what it is. Like you said, the Minshew story shouldn't be happening. We should be watching that team get blown out every week because they have a six-round rookie playing quarterback. But, yeah, you're right. He's got something. He does, and he's fun to watch. Good. And we keep riding with him. I think the Jaguars get it done in Carolina.
Another backup story. No Mitch Trubisky. Chase Daniel will start for the Bears. They travel to London to take on the Oakland Raiders. Raiders coming off a nice win against the Colts. Can Derek Carr do anything against that defense of Chicago, though?
And that's the thing. I mean, when you look, we've talked a lot about the Bears' offense, and I think it's almost a little overlooked that the Bears' defense has been unbelievable. I thought that they would take a little bit of a step back, kind of like the Vikings last year and the Jaguars last year. The defense from year to year doesn't always carry over. But this defense is just, I mean, they shut down Aaron Rodgers in week one, and then they really took it to the Broncos in week two. And, I mean, it's just the Vikings couldn't do anything on them, anything. I mean, they were just incompetent on offense. And so you just look and you say, if this Bears defense is really, really good, I don't know how, you know, if Minnesota couldn't move the ball, I don't really know how Oakland does. I don't think Oakland's that much better than Minnesota on offense. So how do the Raiders move the ball? How do they score more than 10 points? I don't see it.
I don't know how they
do. In a weird way that, you know, the Bears look better with Chase Daniel in the lineup. And I'm not saying that permanently that would be a case, but I think Trubisky was just struggling maybe with confidence and maybe just struggling, period. And I think Chase Daniel, they had a little more confidence in him. It just seemed like everybody played better around him. And I think they're just going to pound the Raiders, to be honest. I think the Raiders got a really nice win, and it was impressive. I get that, you know, that win over the Saints was nice. But I can't see how the Raiders score. Whenever I come to this game, I just kind of say, tell me a scenario on how the Raiders score more than 10 points. Because I've watched this defense four times now, and it is just stifling. It is impressive what they've done.
Yeah. They're not going to do it. Frank Schwab, shutdown corner, Yahoo Sports. Ravens at Steelers. Ravens coming off a bad loss to the Browns. Their defense looks really shaky. Steelers, but how, you know, Cincinnati's so god-awful bad. Is Mason Rudolph up to yet another challenge? Can the Steelers get back in the division race? They need this win badly. They're at home.
You know, I'm kind of out on the Ravens. I think we just got a little too excited about wins over the Dolphins and the Cardinals. I mean, they blew the doors off the Dolphins week one, and Lamar looked great. I like Lamar a lot, but you look back and you say, well, okay, they'd be maybe the worst team of all time, honestly. I mean, that's a really, really bad Dolphins team. Then they came against the Cardinals. They won a game by 6 points, 6 to 7 points maybe. They didn't cover spread, I'll tell you that. And it was like, okay, well, Arizona may be fooling me. Arizona ain't fooling anybody. Arizona's terrible. So they're basically 2-0 against maybe the two of the three, four worst teams in the league. And everybody got excited. Oh, Ravens, Super Bowl contenders. And then they play two real teams. That Chiefs game wasn't close. I watched the Chiefs game. They scored a couple times late to make the score look better. They were never in that game.
Right.
And then they got the doors blown off of them by the Browns at home. And the Browns, I mean, everybody's going to give up yards and points to the Chiefs. The Browns were really struggling on offense, and then they played the Ravens and put up 500 yards and 40 points. So I'm going with the Steelers. I just don't know if this Ravens team is for real. I know I've gotten caught in the trap of that before because John Harbaugh's a good coach, and he usually figures it out, but I just don't know. When you give up 1,100 yards in two games, that's a bad sign. Those are your first two quality opponents of the year? I don't know. I don't love what I've seen out of the Steelers by any means, but I'm going to just take them as home dogs and say, hey, I think they can find a way to get this done against the Ravens team that all of a sudden I really had a lot of questions about.
I'm with you. Frank Schwab joining us. The Buffalo Bills are at the Tennessee Titans. The Bills are probably going to be without starting quarterback Josh Allen because of concussion issues. Matt Barkley, ugh, God. I don't know why backups are so bad, but he was really bad. Titans coming off I guess, an impressive road win over Atlanta. I don't know. I can't figure out the Falcons at all. I think Buffalo's going to try and use the same strategy that the Saints do, rely on their defense to kind of keep this close. This is kind of sneaky good, I think.
It's very interesting because, I mean, the Bills at 3-0, I mean, you're starting to look at their schedule, you're starting to look at the rest of the AFC, and you're saying, wow, this is going to be a wild card team. It's almost unavoidable. But now it's like, well, okay, you lost. You lost your quarterback. Is he going to play this week? We don't know yet. And the Titans kind of, you know, you talk about teams you don't know what to do with. The Titans are number one on that list for me. I have no idea who the Titans are. They could be one of the worst teams of football or one of the better teams in football. I have no idea. I mean, Nate, if you just watch the two games they won, you'd say, this is one of the best teams in the NFL. If you watch the other two games, you say, oh, this team's terrible. They're going to be 4-12. So I don't know what to do with the Titans. I think it's just it's so hard to pick this without knowing who the Bills quarterback's going to be. I guess I'll hedge and just say, if Josh Allen starts or goes to Bills, just because I really do trust their defense. I mean, Tom Brady looked bad last week, still couldn't get a win, but they made him look bad. And if it's Matt Barkley, I'm going to go with the Titans because I just don't trust Matt Barkley. I know that's kind of a cop out.
Oh, he's bad.
I just think there's such a difference between the starter and the backup there that it's kind of it's hard to avoid it.
It is awful, awfully bad. All right, the hard luck Denver Broncos, 0-4. I mean, they lose games down the stretch. It's just unbelievable. They're taking on the Chargers. There'll be more Broncos fans there than Charger fans. But the Broncos, man, so limited on offense, right? And they got to go up against Phillip Rivers. Here's another one. How many points can the Broncos score?
Yeah, that's a problem. I keep saying, like, I mean, every week, I think we talk about the Broncos are close to it, and every week I say, well, the Broncos looked better than the final score. The Broncos lost, but they looked okay. The Broncos, well, at some point, got to win games. It's not good enough to just complain about roughing the passer penalties and lose on last second field goals. I mean, you don't let Leonard Fournette rush for 225 yards, and you know you don't turn the ball over in your own territory like they did against Green Bay. I mean, I don't know. I think this team is they're not terrible, but they're not good either. They lost Bradley Chubb. I just don't know what to make of them right now. I don't know if this is a coaching issue, if Vic Fangio's just not managing games well enough, or it's just really bad luck, or what it is. I guess I'll take the Broncos. It's just a cover. Keep it close, because the Chargers are really, really untrustworthy. They're, you know, they can screw up a cup of coffee most weeks. So I think the Broncos keep closer than anybody thinks. But I don't know. These are two teams that's like that I don't trust either one because the Broncos find ways to lose, and that's a bad thing. And the Chargers have found ways to lose for years and years.
Yes.
So we're kind of who's going to screw this game up? Who's going to screw this game up the least, I guess.
That's awful. Let's get to a good game. Green Bay at Dallas. Both teams coming off their first loss. The Packers defense we raved about, boy, did they look bad last week. And the Dallas offense, boy, we raved about that one. They kind of plummeted as well in that loss to the Saints. So which one gets back on track, the Dallas offense or the Packer defense? That's who wins this thing.
Yeah, and, that, you know, it's interesting. You can kind of look at both teams skeptically and say, you know, the Packers, you know, is their defense as good as they thought? Is their offense okay? Like, and with the Cowboys, I think anybody who was skeptical about the Cowboys had their ammunition after last week. They said, well, who cares who they played? They were 3-0, but you beat the Giants with Eli Manning and then the Redskins and Dolphins. Yeah. They're two terrible teams. Yeah. What do we know about the Cowboys?
Right.
So I think I think the Cowboys kind of cruise here because I know they have their injury issues too, but the Packers come in without Davante Adams, it looks like. If Davante plays, that's a different deal. But Davante Adams has this toe injury, doesn't look like he's going to play. I just don't know how they kind of generate enough offense on the road without him. I know that this is kind of like, hey, anybody can play with Aaron Rodgers. That's not necessarily the case lately. And
no.
I don't really trust any of their other receivers, to be honest. Valdez Scantling's okay. And Geronimo Allison's okay. But these aren't game breaker type of guys. I still think they can kind of keep up with the Cowboys at home, especially. And you know what? If Cowboys lose this one at home, we're just going to say they're frauds. They were not a good football team. They just happened to catch a good early season schedule and get some hype. So I think it's a very interesting game because one of these teams is going to be 3-2 and saying, what happened to our 3-0 start? Like, all of a sudden, we're kind of reeling a little bit.
We're not going to worry about this next one. Colts can't score enough to keep up with Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs, particularly in Arrowhead. But I'm curious about the Monday nighter, Cleveland at San Francisco. 49ers, one of the last unbeaten teams. They're coming off of a bye week. The Browns are playing consecutive road games, but they found their offense last week. Do the 49ers stay undefeated?
Yeah, this is a tough one because I don't truly believe in the 49ers. I don't think they're that good. But I think it's a really tough spot for the Browns. You know, you go from the East Coast, and then you got to travel all the way west to play a team coming off a bye. A team that's pretty good. The 49ers acquitted themselves pretty well. I mean, they're another team. They're 3-0, but who have you beat? The Bengals, the Buccaneers? I guess the Buccaneers are okay. I just think maybe the 49ers are good, and we don't know it yet. But maybe the Browns have bounced back. It's so many of these early season games where you're just trying to figure out who are these teams? Are they any good? I'm just going to ride with just this is a tough travel spot for the Browns, especially catching a team coming off a bye. That's why I lean towards the 49ers, who I think are pretty good. I don't know if they're great. I don't know their playoff team, but they are pretty good. So I'm just going to go with the home team here. And you know, hey, if the Browns go, you know, they go on the road, they win against the 3-0 team, I'll be pretty impressed and say, okay, there's your new AFC North favorite. They're back. This is the team we expected. And I'll be pretty impressed, but I'll pick San Francisco and wait for that to happen.
Frank, enjoy week 5, buddy. Thank you so much for all your help, and have a great weekend.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll take a quick time out here. More of the Jordy Helfrich Show on this day in history. Not a good one for the Florida State Seminoles. Next. All right, we're back. Time to finish this baby up on this day in sports history, October 3rd, 1992. What a rivalry it was, Florida State, Miami. Well, the Seminoles, with the chance to win the game, missed a field goal in the waning moments, falling to Miami for the second straight season. Always known as wide right number 2. On this day, October 3rd, 1992. Today's your birthday, October 3rd. Happy birthday to all of you. Hope you have a great day. Cake, ice cream, a present or two. Be with family, be with friends. Yes, Gwen Stefani is celebrating a birthday today. So happy 50th birthday to Gwen. And happy birthday to former LSU defensive lineman Ramsey Dardar. Happy, happy birthday. So special thanks to all of our guests today. Chris Kozart, Jim Nickel, Doug Morrow, George Faust, Todd Callis, Frank Schwab. Special thanks to my producer extraordinaire, Clint Domain, a.k.a. CD. Special thanks to all of you for listening. Special thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We had a football Friday on a Thursday. Tomorrow, during our time slot, Astros, Tampa Bay Rays, Game 1 of the Best of 5 AL Division Series. Keep it tuned in. And then we have football Friday night. Got the Tigers on Saturday. It's going to be a busy, fun weekend. So I'll enjoy 3 days. Until Monday, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty. Enjoy.